वासुदेवाय
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 87 एंटाइटल्ड द प्रेयर्स ऑफ द पर्सोनिफाइड वेदास दिस इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 15
बृहद उपलब्धम एतद् अवयन्ति अवेशशतय बृहद उपलब्धमेतद् अवयन्ति अवेशशतय यता उदायास्तम अयु विकृते मृदि ववक्रत्यात् यता उदायास्तमयो विकृतेर मृदि ववक्रततात् अथा ऋषयो ददुस्त्वयि मनो वचानां ऋताम् अथा ऋषयो ददुस्त्वयि मनो वचनार्चरितम् कथम् अयाथा भवन्ति भुवि दत्त पदानि नृणम् कथाम् अयाथ भुवन्ति भुवि दत्त पदानि नृणम् बृहद् उपलब्धमेतद् अवयन्ति अवेशशतय यता उदायास्तम् अयु विकृतेर् मृदि विवक्रतात् अत ऋषयो ददुस्त्वयि मनो वचनाचरितम् कथम् अयाथा भवन्ति भुवि दत्त पदानि नृणाम्
Matijis. Brihat as the supreme, upalabdham perceived, etat this world, avayanti they consider, avasheshataya in terms of its being all pervading, foundation of existence, yataha since, udaya the generation, astam ayu and dissolution, vikrite of a transformation, mridi of clay, va as if, avikritat the supreme itself, not being subject to transformation, ataha therefore, rishaya the sages who compiled the Vedic mantras, daduhu placed, tvayi in you, manaha their minds, vachana words, acharitam and actions, katham how, ayata not as they are, bhuvanti bhavanti become, bhuvi upon the ground, datta placed, padani the steps, nirnam of men. Translation: this perceivable world is identified with the supreme because the supreme Brahman is the ultimate foundation of all existence, remaining unchanged as all created things are generated from it and at last dissolved into it. Just as clay remains unchanged by the products made from it and again merged with it. Thus, it is toward you alone that the Vedic sages direct all their thoughts, words and actions. After all, how can the footsteps of men fail to touch the earth on which they live? Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There may be some doubt as to whether the Vedic mantras are unanimous when identifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, some mantras state, Indra yata vashishtasya raja. Indra is the king of all moving and non-moving beings. Rig Veda 1.32.15. While others say that, Agnir murdha diva. Agni is the chief of the heavens. And yet other mantras point to different deities as the absolute. It would seem then that the Vedas present a polytheistic worldview. Answering this doubt, the Vedas themselves explain in this verse that there can be only one source of universal creation called Brahman or Brihat, the greatest, which is the singular truth underlying and pervading all existence. No finite deity like Indra or Agni can fulfill this unique role, nor would the Shrutis be so ignorant as to propose such an idea. As indicated here by the word Tvayi, Lord Vishnu alone is the absolute truth. Indra and other demigods may be glorified in various ways, but they possess only those powers Lord Sri Vishnu has granted them. The Vedic sages understand that this entire world, including Indra, Agni and everything else perceivable by the eyes, ears and other senses, is identical with the one supreme truth, the personality of Godhead, who is called Brihat, the greatest, because he is avashesha, the ultimate substance that remains. From the Lord, everything expands at creation, and into him everything dissolves at annihilation. He exists before and after the material manifestation as the constant basis, known to the philosophers as the ingredient cause, upadana. Despite the fact that countless manifestations emanate from him, the Supreme Lord exists eternally unchanged. An idea that the Shrutis specifically emphasize here with the word avikritat.
The word mridiva, as in the case of clay, allude to a famous analogy spoken by Udalaka to his son Shvetaketu in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.4.1. Vacharambhanam vikaro nabdheya mritiketi eva satyam. The objects of the material world exist merely as names, transformation defined by language, whereas the ingredient cause, like the clay from which pots are made, is the actual reality. A mass of clay is the ingredient cause of various pots, statues and so on. But the clay itself remains in its essence unchanged. Eventually the pots and other objects will be destroyed and returned to the clay from which they came. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is a total ingredient cause, and yet He remains eternally untouched by the transformation. This is the purport of the statement, Sarvam Khalavidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman. Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1. Wondering at this mystery, the great devotee Gajendra prayed, Namo Namaste Khila Karanaya Niskaranayad Adbhuta Karanaya. Obeisances again and again to you, the source of all creation. You are the inconceivable cause of all causes, and of you there is no other cause. Bhagavatam 8.3.15. Prakriti, material nature, is often considered the ingredient cause of creation in Western science as well as in the Vedas. This does not contradict the higher fact of the Supreme Lord's being the final cause. Since Prakriti is His energy and is herself subject to change, in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.24.19, Lord Krishna says, Prakritir yasyopadanam adhara purusha para sato bhivan jaka kalo brahma tat tritayam tva aham. The material universe is real, having Prakriti as its original ingredient and final state. Lord Mahavishnu is a resting place of nature which becomes manifest by the power of time. Thus, nature, the almighty Vishnu, and time are not different from me, the supreme absolute truth. Prakriti, however, undergoes transformation, while her Lord, the supreme Purusha, does not. Prakriti is the personality of Godhead's external energy, but He has another energy, His internal energy, which is Swarup Bhuta, non-different from His very essence. The Lord's internal energy, like Himself, is never subject to material change. Hare Krishna. This is not even half the purport. So we are stopping here for today. The remaining part of the purport will be discussed tomorrow. Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar
श्रीवासादिगौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण।
Seeking the blessings of all devotees so that I can speak something on this very complicated subject matter. As we are obviously seeing, this section of the Bhagavatam actually proves that we are not qualified to understand the Vedas. When the Vedas personified speak, we go to sleep. Practically. So just to make it a little more practical and relevant to all of us, we'll try to see what we can understand from this particular verse of the Bhagavatam. So essentially, in this particular verse, the essence of this verse is about how Krishna remains unchanged in spite of everything else changing around. The material manifestation changes, and in spite of all the external things changing, it's possible, or rather, it's a fact that Krishna remains unchanged, who is the creator of all these changing elements. So many times when the Vedic scriptures are studied, Krishna remains hidden. Rather, you cannot find God in this complicated Vedic phenomena. So, to find God, we need the association, or rather the help of great devotees of the Lord to help us find Him. One time there was a person who was trying to search for God. And he tried a lot to search for God in through the pages of the Vedas, through, you know, going to all the holy places. And somehow he could never find God. So he started praying very intensely, "My dear Lord, I want to see you." At that point of time, this person, he met a saint. And he asked the saint, "You know, how do I find God?" The saint told him, "God is in your heart. That's where you'll find Him." So this devotee, this person, he was very happy. So he sat under a tree and started, he closed his eyes, tried to look into his own heart to find God in there. But instead of finding God, he found some really angry and very, very ferocious looking animals. So he got very scared. So he tried to look into his heart to find God, but he saw so many ferocious animals. So he opened his eyes and left over there. He said, "I can't find God in my heart." So next day he met another saintly person, and he asked him, "You know, where do I find God? Somebody told me to find God inside my heart, and inside my heart I found all these animals." That other saintly person said, "You should find God in satsang. Go in the association of saintly people, and when you sit in satsang, there you will find God." So this man went into a satsang and he tried to, you know, find God. So as he sat in the satsang, he kept praying, "My dear Lord, please give me a darshan, please give me a darshan." And somehow or the other, he just couldn't find God in satsang also. So he got frustrated, left from the satsang and went somewhere else. And he met a third saintly person. And he asked him, "You know, I tried, two saints guided me, one told me to look inside my heart, I found animals. When I went in satsang, I found, you know, God not there also. How do I find Him? Where do I find Him?" So essentially this third saintly person, he said, both these places that you searched for, God was there. But the problem is, you couldn't see them because your eyes have a defect. So what you need is you need a spectacles. You need an optician who can help you get the right spectacles so that you can see God. So then he said, "Tell me who the optician is, where can I find this optician?" And then this saintly person told him, "This optician is a spiritual master, but
when the optician gives you specs, he charges a heavy price.
You know.
And he said, what is the price? The saintly person said, the price is pure character. So he said, the first saint that showed you that God is in your heart, he's right. Because God is actually in your heart. But he is sitting behind all these animals, all these beasts, lust, anger, greed, envy, all these are in front and God is hiding behind them. So when you take shelter of a spiritual master, the spiritual master helps you take away those animals by purifying your character, by purifying your personality. And then you can see God within your heart also. And then, so essentially he said, when you come across these animals, don't be afraid of them. You have to fight them. You have to remove them from your heart, then you will see God. And the second saintly person also is right. God is definitely present in satsang. But to be able to find God in satsang, your mind must be peaceful first. So if work on your anarthas, work on your inner animals, and then you go in satsang, there also you will find God, because God is very much there. But because your mind is so agitated with so much guilt and pain and, you know, sins that you have done, therefore you cannot see God. So essentially this saint, the third saintly person said, God is everywhere, but we need to train our eyes to see Him everywhere. And therefore, essentially, this particular verse where the Vedas personified are appreciating and praying to God through such complicated verses, the essential truth is very simple. The truth is not very complicated. So the truth may be presented in a very complicated way. But the truth is very simple. The truth is that God is present everywhere. In fact, in midst of all the changing circumstances, in the midst of all the changing situations of life, in the midst of all the external changes that Prakriti creates, there is one unchangeable personality, and that is the presence of Krishna. So for most people in life, when they come across change, when they come across money, when they come across things, when they come across a lot of wealth, so essentially what happens is that they feel that you can buy anything with money. But when you have money, it's actually a test of your intelligence, test of your stability, what you do with that money, what you buy with that money. Similarly, in the Gita, Krishna speaks about, Yesham Tvantagatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam. So to be able to connect with Krishna, you need some pious credits of the past, some punya of the past. So most people, so punya is like money. When you earn a lot of money, you acquire the ability to invest that money, or rather use that money to buy things. Similarly, when you do a lot of punya, lot of pious credits, you invest that punya to buy something. So most people use that punya to buy material enjoyment. But those who have intelligence, they use that punya to find association of saintly people. Because to find the association of saintly people also is an investment of your punya only. And when you find the association of saintly people, those saintly people will teach you how to make sure that with the kind, amount of punya that you have, you actually grow in your spiritual credits, you grow in your spiritual life. Rather than getting into the cycle of, you know, expanding punya and taking another birth again. So when Krishna takes his incarnations or his different avatars, there is a specific objective, purpose of the avatar. Like Krishna is appearing over here in Vrindavan. So Krishna appears in his different forms, different avatars. Why? So that when Krishna comes to the material world, he comes here to kind of create an advertisement so that he can take back many people to the spiritual world, back to the Vaikuntha planet, back to Golok Vrindavan. But generally, when an avatar is walking, when the Supreme Lord is walking, behind him many people are following. But unfortunately, if Krishna walks at his speed, like Kalyavan is chasing Krishna literally. But Krishna was walking at a great pace, Kalyavan couldn't catch up with him. So if an incarnation of the Lord comes over here, and the purpose of the incarnation is take people to the spiritual world back,
Krishna cannot walk at his speed. He has to walk at our speed. He has to slow down a little bit. So many times when the incarnation of the Lord appears into the material world, they slow down their pace to suit our pace. And therefore, Krishna tries to bridge the gap. So when Krishna appears in the material world, his pastimes, if you see, are all pastimes that we can relate to. Damodar Leela is a pastime that we can very much relate to. A small child being tied by his mother for his naughty pranks. Something that we can very much relate to. A young boy falling in love with a young girl is something that we can very much relate to. A person who is ambitious to acquire, create a political turmoil or rather a change in government is something that we can relate to. Krishna did that in many places. When there is a bad government, Krishna went and, created a revolution and changed that bad government. So there are certain things that we can relate to what Krishna does. And therefore Krishna specifically does all those pastimes when he comes into the material world. He slows down his speed. Otherwise, the speed at which Krishna performs his pastimes, we just cannot conceive it only. We cannot just perceive it at all. And therefore, when Krishna performs his pastimes in the material world, he kind of adjusts so that people like us who are dull, we can connect with those pastimes and connect with Krishna's greatness. So, when we talk about connecting with God, when we talk about connecting with Krishna, most people, they say that it's not our intelligence, it's not our ability, it is not our capacity by which we can connect with God. It is God's grace and God's inspiration with which we can connect. Otherwise, we don't have a capacity to connect with God at all. The understanding is that if somebody has a ocean of milk, huge amount of milk that he has, and he is very kind and he wants to distribute that milk to everybody. Like we get, 500, 600 liters of Padmena milk from Rajasthan. Now we can't do, anything with the 500 liters of milk. We have to distribute it to others, Then make announcement saying that whoever wants milk can take it, So different people according to different capacity order different quantities. Somebody orders 1 liter, somebody orders 5 liters according to the amount of consumption they can have. So similarly, if God is trying to give away milk, now, depends on the amount of vessel that we have, the size of the vessel that we have, how much we can take. God has a never-ending capacity to give, but our capacity to take is very limited. So if we go to God with a broken pot and we ask him for milk and he fills our pot with milk, by the time we reach home, there will be no milk left. So it's not God's problem. God wants to give. But we also should have the capacity to hold. And therefore, when we approach God with trickery or cleverness or some kind of, in a mood which is not conducive to Krishna, then that's like having a hole in the pot. We take the pot, Krishna fills it with milk, with his grace, but when we come back home, nothing is left. So, essentially, the stories of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Ramayana, Mahabharata, these stories have some very interesting, deeper insights to them to explain to us the same concept that we are hearing in Srimad Bhagavatam today. How God is present everywhere and God is the one who is the cause of everything. Most of the stories in this world are actually very simple stories. But depending on how intelligent you are, or rather, how much God allows you to understand those stories, you can derive deeper insights from them. Just like, there is a very interesting story in the life of Shivaji Maharaj. And this story shows how even a person who is a completely lay person, who has no understanding of the world, even through the mouth of that person, there is some wisdom that is available. Simple story. But it has such a profound message, and that too, this one story had such a powerful impact in the creation of Shivaji's kingdom. When Shivaji escaped from Agra, and he was running away through the forest, through the jungles, somehow to save his life, and escape from the clutches of the Mughals, he was at some point very hungry and very, very thirsty. So he had nothing, nowhere to go to. And he found one hut. And in the hut, he knocked the door and there was an old lady. So he asked her, can you feed me something? I'm very hungry. This old lady now, she didn't recognize the Shivaji Maharaj. Because he was dressed differently, very disheveled. So she called him in and she agreed to feed him. So she put a plate of, you know, banana leaf. And she put rice on it and she put dal on it. The hot steaming dal. So when she put the dal on it, the dal started sliding out of the plate. Started, you know, flowing out of the plate. And Shivaji Maharaj, he was struggling how to, you know, stop the dal from flowing out. And this old lady made one statement. And that one statement of this old lady became the whole strategy of Shivaji Maharaj's, you know, conquest, you know. This old lady, the statement she made was, why are you eating food like Shivaji Maharaj? She didn't know this was Shivaji Maharaj. She said, why are you eating food like Shivaji Maharaj? She said, first make a hole in between and make sure there's a good border so that the dal doesn't flow out. So that's when Shivaji Maharaj understood his defect in the way he was expanding. So he was expanding a lot, but he didn't have a border to secure his, you know, kingdom. The amazing part is, just like this story is so simple, but this story had an impact in an entire kingdom. Similarly, the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, Ramayana are very simple stories if you see. But depending on how much you grasp and depending on how much you understand, it can have an impact in our heart and our consciousness. And therefore, when we study the Bhagavatam, when we study the Srimad, the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to always look for where are those deeper insights hidden. And maybe one of those insights can help us in our spiritual lives. So, all the stories, whether it is Bhagavat, Ramayana, Mahabharata, it's always about good and bad. It always talks about some people are good and some people are bad. And this same truth is reminded again and again throughout the stories. We find in the Mahabharata, Karna is a son of Surya and Arjuna is son of Indra. Both are brothers, born from the same mother, and they should have had deep love for each other. In the Ramayana we find Bali and Sugriv. Bali is son of Indra and Sugriv son of Surya. Real brothers, but, you know, they are supposed to have deep love for each other. But you find conflict between both. Arjun Karna conflict, Bali Sugriv conflict. And we find in both of them, the truth is the same, but the story is slightly changed. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find Samudra Manthan Leela. In Samudra Manthan Leela, there is a conflict between demons and demigods. So, the need for Amrit is present in both. Demons also need Amrit. Demigods also need Amrit. Both the sides are doing the needful so that to achieve the same goal. Both want Amrit. But the difference is that for getting Amrit, the demigods are taking help of Lord Vishnu. For getting his goal, Sugriva is taking the help of Ram. For achieving his goal, Arjuna is taking the help of Krishna. The story is the same, exactly. Or the essence of the story is the same, exactly. But the details of each of the stories change. So essentially, the demigods, they want the Amrit, they're taking the help of the Lord, so that they can use that for doing good deeds. And the demons, they don't want the Lord, and they're not interested in anybody monitoring what they do with Amrit. They want to do what they want, basically. So the Lord, what he does is, the main aim of Vishnu, if you see in the Samudra Manthan Leela, the aim of Vishnu is to make sure that the good qualities become immortal and the bad qualities get destroyed. The demigods represent good qualities and the demons represent bad qualities. So the entire Samudra Manthan Leela is somehow or other Vishnu wants to make sure the good qualities thrive and the bad qualities get destroyed. This is exactly the language in which all the scriptures speak. This is the exact message in which all the scriptures are conveying. When you put a seed in the farm and it rains, the seed sprouts out and crops grow. Along with the crops, weeds also grow. Unwanted shrubs also grow. So essentially, when you try to water the seeds, you will always find unnatural growth that has to be removed out, that has to be weeded out. This is the way of life. So essentially, the way in which we have to live life is to make sure that the good qualities thrive and the bad qualities get destroyed. So Vishnu, Lord Vishnu tells both of them that they should come together and churn the ocean so that they get nectar. The aim of the Lord is very clear. The demigod should get the nectar and the demon should not get the nectar. That is very clear. But the question is, by doing this, is God actually partial to the demigods and, you know, bad to the demons or not taking the side of the demons? In fact, Narad Muni goes one step higher in analyzing this. Essentially, if you study this particular pastime, he says that Vishnu is not just partial to the demons, partial to the demigods and, you know, not siding the demons, but he is actually not even taking the side of his own devotee Lord Shiva. Can you imagine when the Samudra Manthan happened, Shiva was somebody whom Vishnu loves. Vishnu didn't even take the side of the loved ones. So what did Vishnu do? Try to see. When the poison came out from the ocean, he asked Lord Shankar, Lord Shiva to come and consume that poison. But when Lakshmi and Kaustubhuni came out from the ocean, he took it himself. So when, you know, Lakshmi Devi came out and Kaustubhuni came out, Vishnu took it, and when poison came out, he gave it to Shiva. So if you see from an apparent point of view, from an external point of view, Vishnu is seeming selfish. He is seeming that he is scheming that demigods get nectar and demons don't get it. Not just that, he is also one level higher thinking that his devotee, or rather his loved one Shiva, gets poison and he himself gets, you know, Lakshmi Devi and Kaustubhmani. So it seems that Lord is doing all the wrong things in this particular pastime and Lord is very selfish. So here in this particular shloka that we are discussing today, it talks about how the Lord is the unchanging element. What is the meaning of saying when the Vedas say that the Lord is the unchanging element? It means that the Lord is unaffected by all the externals. That means He has nothing to gain. He has nothing to lose. He is not scheming so that He gets something. He is doing it on an external level. It seems that there is partiality, but there is a deeper insight to this particular pastime. So if you contemplate on it from a deeper level, it seems that the good of the demon, so what is good for the demons? What is good for society? And what is good for Lord Shiva? So when Shiva drank the poison, poison is called poison when it kills you. But when poison gives you a glory or gives you a name and fame, when Lord Shiva drank the poison didn't kill him. But rather, he got glorified by drinking the poison. So essentially, Lord Shankar, he made the divine poison seem nectar. So essentially, the poison transformed into something which became a glorification of Lord Shiva. So in that sense, the churning of the ocean, it's like what happens to society. So when Shiva got the poison, he didn't get harmed, but he actually got glorified. So Vishnu, by offering him poison, he didn't harm Shiva. That was not the purpose of harming Shiva. That was not the purpose of giving poison to Shiva. But rather, Vishnu actually helped to glorify Shiva to another level. So similarly, when Lakshmi Devi came out, Lakshmi Devi, she was looking for looking at the different demigods, looking at the different qualities that they have. And she saw that they have some have good qualities and some have bad qualities. But when she saw Lord Narayan, she saw there was only good qualities in him. But the interesting reason why she chose Narayan is that, the reason she chose Narayan is, she saw when all the other demigods were looking at her, when she came out, all of them were looking at her with great anxiety, with great desire. I want her, I want her, I want her. Only one person was not looking at her at all, and that was Lord Vishnu. And Lakshmi Devi said, I want to go to him. He not only has all good qualities, but he is not even looking at me with desire to have me. That's the nature of Lakshmi. Anybody who looks at Lakshmi runs away. And anybody who doesn't desire Lakshmi, Lakshmi runs to that person. Lord Vishnu over here, of course, even the Kaustubh Muni, as soon as the Kaustubh Muni came out, it automatically moved towards Lord Vishnu. That is the nature of great personalities. The nature of great personalities is that they automatically orient themselves towards the Lord. They automatically orient themselves towards Vishnu. So here in the Samudra Manthan pastime, the Lord indicated to make the Mandrachal mountain into the Manthan or the churning rod. So the word Mandrachal, so the word Achal, Achal means immovable. So the word Mantrachal essentially means that the mountain is immovable, which essentially means it is very stable. The mountain represents thoughts. So most people in this world have thoughts that are very rigid. It just, once they decide they want to do this, they are not flexible at all. When you try to preach to people who have a 30, 40 years of traditional understanding or certain culture that they follow, they are like the Mandrachal mountain. Achal. That means their thoughts don't move only. You can't shake them, you can't move them, you can't churn them. Nothing you can do to them. Because they are fixed, rigid in their thoughts. But the Mandrachal mountain is very interesting because though it is immovable, but where does Lord place the Mandrachal mountain? On his own back. So that means, essentially, what Krishna is trying to say is that when the basis of your thoughts is on Krishna, when the basis of your thoughts rests on Vishnu, the thoughts become very flexible. The thoughts become very flexible in, that means you can accept the higher realities of life with a lot of flexibility. But when you have rigid thoughts, Mandrachal mountain, when it stands on its own, not on somebody's back, either it is sinking into the ocean or it is rigid standing in one place, it just doesn't move at all. So essentially, Vishnu is trying to tell that our thoughts should be flexible in terms of how we try to understand the deeper truths of life. So, as I was saying, in the Ramayana and Mahabharata and in the Bhagavat, the good and the bad are always there. But Vishnu sides the good, not because he wants to side the good, but because the good will use the good in trying to do something better for society. So that means the demigods get the nectar, it is not only for their own enjoyment, but the nectar is for the greater benefit of society. The demigods don't drink all the nectar at one go. The demons, if they had got the nectar, they would have finished it off by the end of the day. The demigods drink what they are needed, and then the nectar is stored somewhere, so that in future, it can be used, you know, for the benefit of society. So here, in the Bhagavat again, as I was saying, that there is always sides, paksha, or sides. So when Jatayu was killed by Ravan, Jatayu is called a pakshi or a bird. And pakshapat means taking sides, you know. So between Ravan and Sita, Jatayu had to choose one of the two sides. Sita is telling Jatayu, don't come to me. Ravan naturally was kidnapping Sita and taking. So Jatayu decided to take the side of Sita. And when he took the side of Sita, he lost his life. He lost one of his wings. So when Jatayu lost his wings, and finally he fell on the ground and Lord Ram came to him. So Jatayu told Ram, my dear Lord, till now I had only wings, paksha. But with my wings, I could have come to you. But now that I have no wings, you have to come to me. So sometimes taking sides, when a regular human being takes sides, then we might end up taking the wrong side. But when the Supreme Lord decides to choose whom to take on his side, the Lord can orchestrate his whole pastime in such a way that the right person falls on the right side and it causes the right effect. The problem in most demons is that when they try to conquer evil or when they try to destroy evil, they end up in themselves becoming more evil. If you study in the Bhagavat, or rather in Ramayana, there is a story of two people, Sahasrarjun. Sahasrarjun is the person whom who took the cow from Jamadagni. So he had 1,000 hands. Though Shastrajun had 1,000 hands, he still wanted the Kamadhenu cow. So what does 1,000 hands represents? 1,000 hands represents that this fellow had the ability to work hard. Hands represent hard work. You can work towards your karma, towards your actions. But in spite of having 1,000 hands, Sahastra Arjun wanted the Kamadhenu cow. The Kamadhenu cow represents a relaxed life. Kamadhenu cow represents a personality who could fulfill all your desires. So most people are like Sahastra Arjun. They want the Kamadhenu cow, but they don't want to use their 1,000 hands. They don't want to work hard. So essentially, Kamadhenu cow was given to Jamadagni by the Supreme Lord because it's not that Jamadagni did not want to work hard. But Jamadagni was too busy doing so many things for society that Vishnu didn't want him to waste time in the ordinary things. And therefore the cow was given to him so that he can use that cow so that he can do greater good to society. But when Sahasrarajan wanted the cow, he wanted it for himself, for his own enjoyment, to fulfill his own desires. And therefore, people like Sahasra Arjun, so he forcefully took the cow. And Sahasra Arjun was a very powerful person. If you study the history of Sahasra Arjun, this fellow, he defeated Ravan himself. Single-handed. In fact, he kept Ravan as a prisoner in his prison. In the same Ramayana, we find Vali, he imprisoned Ravan. He caught Ravan under his arms and took him around the world actually. And he kept Ravan tied up like an animal literally. But the problem between Sahasrarajuna and Vali is that, of Sahasrarajuna and Vali is that, both of them tried to suppress a demon. Both of them tried to suppress evil. Just like when you have a disease, a very deadly disease, there are two ways to deal with the disease. One way to deal with the disease is that you suppress it. The pain decreases, the side effects of disease immediately decreases. But then, after some time, the disease becomes much more powerful and comes out. So, Vali and Sahasra Arjun, what they did was, they tried to suppress Ravan. They tried to squeeze Ravan, they tried to put him down. But, in the end, they themselves became evil. They themselves became demoniac. Instead of suppressing Ravan, if they had killed Ravan, both of them could have actually got the glory of killing a demon. But essentially, by suppressing Ravan, what they did was, the evil qualities of Ravan entered into them. They both became evil. Sahasrarajan became a demoniac. And Vali became super demoniac. He took his own brother's wife. He almost was wanting to kill his brother. So essentially, throughout the stories of Ramayana and Mahabharata, we find that when we don't accept this unchangeable fact, Krishna is the unchanging fact of the universe. That's what the scriptures, Vedic scriptures mention. But many people who don't accept Krishna as the unchanging fact of the universe, they try to themselves become the unchanging fact. The ego is such a dominant thing that many people, using this ego, they try to dominate. They try to show that they are better than God. Vali was sent, he was son of Indra. He was sent to the earth to assist Ram. So what the demigods were told was, wait for Ram to come. So all the monkeys were waiting for Ram to come. But before Ram came, this fellow went and captured Ravan. What work Ram was supposed to do, this fellow went and did it. But instead of killing Ravan, what he did was, he only suppressed Ravan for some time. Because he suppressed Ravan, because he tried to suppress an evil, the evil became even more dominant. So Vali became Ravan's friend. And Vali started having the same qualities as Ravan, manifesting same qualities as Ravan. And Ravan didn't decrease in his power, he only increased after that. So similarly, when we are trying to understand this whole concept of how Vishnu is the cause of all creation, we have to try to become assistants to Lord Vishnu's creation, rather than try to become a replacement to Lord Vishnu's creation. So most people in this world, rather than accepting the unchangeable fact and trying to assist the unchangeable fact, they try to change the unchangeable fact and replace it with themselves. And therefore, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he writes in his teaching and always talks in his talks, he would say that one should die before dying. What is the meaning of die before dying? That means before the person dies, his ego should die. I'll end with a very interesting story. One time there was a man who went to Africa and he got a multicolored bird. And this multicolored parrot, he brought it back home to India and he kept it in a cage naturally. 2 years, nice music, nice songs, nice food. He would feed it nicely, take care, good care of the bird. But the bird was very sad. So after 2 years, this fellow was going back to Africa. So he went and asked the bird that, do you want to convey something to your friends? So this bird told the master, tell my friends in Africa that I am very happy in a cage. So this fellow went and told his, you know, he went to Africa and he met the parrot's friends. He told the parrot's friends that your friend is very happy in a cage. The friends, one of the friends of the parrot, he started crying looking at his friend, you know, sad situation in a cage. As soon as he heard the news, he fell down dead. Now this man got shocked that this bird must be so attached to his friend that when he heard the news that he is in a cage, he died. So he came back to India and he told the parrot in the cage that I have a sad news for you. As soon as your friend heard this news, the message that I gave, he fell down and died. This bird in the cage, as soon as he heard this, he also fell down and dead, you know, and showed as if he's dead. So this man removed the parrot from the cage and threw it in the garbage outside. And as soon as the parrot fell into the garbage, this parrot flew off and sat on a tree. This man said, why did you cheat me? You acted as if you're dead. The parrot on the tree, he told him, this is what my friend conveyed to me. If I want to get liberated, then I should act as if I'm dead. If I want to remain alive, then I should die before dying. So essentially, most people in life, they give life to their ego. They allow their ego to be very dominant and very prominent. But essentially, through this parrot, we can learn this very interesting lesson that before the physical body dies, we have to go through one more death. That is the death of the ego. Die before dying. And only when we learn to die before dying, we can accept Krishna's facts or Krishna's unchangeable factor, and rather not try to replace Krishna and become the unchangeable factor ourselves. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.